I want to tell you this morning about a tournament that was held in the mid-1980s in the San Fernando Valley area. It was a pretty normal tournament, not a big deal at the time, pretty nondescript. You've been to these kinds of tournaments on a Saturday, basketball tournaments, volleyball tournaments, gymnastics meets. This one happened to be martial arts. And there were many teams there represented, some pretty established, some young and upstart. Some of the matches were close, some were pretty easy defeats. And in the finals, it came down to a competitor from a very established team, all the popular kids in school, led by a sensei who smelled blood in the water. The other finalist was from a scrappy upstart dojo with a homemade uniform and the insignia just hand-sewn on. And it was the final match, and our scrappy underdog competitor, he was already injured at this point. He'd been injured by an illegal blow to the back of the knee. And he walks out on the mat, and there's a few sparring rounds. And then the establishment, the popular kid, he goes over to his sensei, John Kreese. And Kreese gives him some instructions for how to finish off his opponent. He said a very memorable phrase that has echoed through the generations for how to finish the match. Let's see before we reveal it if you know what he told him to do. What did he tell Johnny to do? Oh, there we go. Sweep the leg. Press deeper into the wound. Exploit your opponent's vulnerability. No mercy for the weak. Sweep the leg. We come to this Advent season asking some questions related to this. What does the world do when it senses someone who is weak? What do we do as God's people with people who are vulnerable? And the bigger question, what does God do? How does God respond to vulnerability, to people who are just hanging on? Our text today is Matthew chapter 12. And in this chapter, we begin with Jesus and his disciples preaching and teaching in Galilee. And one Saturday, they're walking through some grain fields, and they're hungry. But there's a problem. It's the Sabbath. And you can't pick grain to eat on the Sabbath because that would be work. So what do Jesus and his disciples do? They pick grain. And there are some Pharisees around, the leaders, the religious elite. And they look at what Jesus and his disciples are doing. And they decide they have something to say about it. Matthew chapter 12, verse 2. Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath. Jesus is having none of this. He points to Scripture. He points to historical examples of other figures who have looked out for vulnerability and hunger, even if it meant breaking some rules. And then Jesus states his own identity and his own mission of helping people at their lowest. And that begins a pattern in Matthew 12. Jesus helps a vulnerable person or people in need, and the Pharisees get mad at him because it breaks some rule. And Jesus keeps helping, and the tension keeps rising. And at one point, he says to them, "If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' then you wouldn't have condemned the innocent. He turns their own scriptures right back on them. If you could read your Bible correctly, you wouldn't be bothering me. I desire mercy, Jesus says. That is quoting from the prophet Hosea. He's quoting the prophets. He's about to quote them again. But first, he goes into the synagogue. It's still the Sabbath. The service is underway. Everyone's gathered and they're in their Saturday best. Everything is carefully planned. Things are humming along smoothly. But there's a man there with a shriveled hand. He's disfigured. He has a disability that would have been embarrassing. Maybe some of you know what it's like to show up to services trying to hide something you're embarrassed about, you're ashamed of. He's there. He would have been on the fringes. As you may know, many at this time would have viewed this kind of disability or disfigurement. They would have viewed it as a sign of sin. Like he did something to bring this on. And yet this bold man shows up in a courageous act of defiance against his own disability. With his shriveled hand, he shows up and Jesus sees him. And before he does anything, the Pharisees know what Jesus is going to do. They know who he is already. They know what's next. And they say to him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" Now think about this scene. Here's a man who's vulnerable, a man who's carrying a wound, a man who would love to be made whole. Jesus wants to heal him. And the Pharisees want to weaponize the rule book. Jesus heals the man, and the Pharisees respond by planning a secret meeting to make plans to assassinate him. Jesus knows the tension is high at this point, so he withdraws. He takes some of the followers with him, and he continues teaching, and he keeps healing, but he tells them not to broadcast it. He's basically saying to them, "Do you see what happens when I do this out there in front of everyone? Let's not keep that going. It's not working out well." And then Matthew lets us in on something that we might not see on our own. Matthew tells us that everything Jesus has been doing to bind up the wounded, to take care of the vulnerable, everything Jesus has been doing is all tied to something that was written hundreds of years earlier. Jesus here isn't just choosing a strategy, he's following a script. And in Matthew chapter 12, beginning in verse 18, the writer here quotes almost verbatim from the prophet Isaiah to tell us about who Jesus is and why he's doing what he's doing in this moment. "Here is my servant whom I have chosen, the one I love, in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him, and he will proclaim justice to the nations. He will not quarrel or cry out. No one will hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out till he has brought justice through to victory. In his name, the nations will put their hope." Matthew is telling us, this is why Jesus refuses to shout. This is why he does not retaliate. This is why he moves gently among hurting people. It's not weakness. It's prophecy. It's his identity. It's the servant. And in that passage, we get mission language about Jesus, that he is proclaiming justice to the nations who will put their hope in him. We get personality and identity language. He's not loud. He's not quarrelsome. He's not crying out and making a big scene in the streets. And then we get these two beautiful poetic images. A bruised reed. The kind of fragile shoot that just bends with a strong breeze. One careless touch and it just snaps. And yet the servant handles it with care. Or there's the smoldering wick, a candle with no flame, just a soft red glow that shows it's almost out. It wouldn't take the big bad wolf to blow it out, just a very small puff. Yet the servant has such restraint that the ember still glows. This is the Messiah of Advent, the gentle servant who sees hurting people and moves toward them. He treats them with tenderness. This compassion might be freshly embodied with Jesus, but it's not new to who God is. This isn't an Old Testament, New Testament kind of thing. If you go all the way back to Leviticus 19, there are vulnerable groups by name written into the law of God's people. Groups of people who should receive special care because they're in a vulnerable spot. Leviticus 19, by name, lists groups like the poor and foreigners and those who are deaf or blind or who have other disabilities, the elderly. God has always had a heart for the vulnerable and has always moved gently among bruised reeds and smoldering wicks. When we look around us and see how the world treats people, we usually see the opposite. The world sees someone weak and says, "Finish him." The world sees someone vulnerable and says, "Exploit her." Jesus even dealt with these dynamics in developing his role as the Messiah, because there were some people when Jesus came on the scene who wanted a tough Messiah, one who would break Rome's back with military strength. Others wanted a Messiah who would threaten sinners with judgment so forcefully that Israel might finally straighten up and fly right and get the Roman Empire off their backs. That's not the way of Jesus, and it's not the kind of Messiah that he is and was. Jesus knows what it's like to have the vulnerable threatened. He was born into that kind of world. Matthew tells us earlier in his book that King Herod, threatened and insecure as he was, ordered the slaughter of all the children around Jesus' age, determined to eliminate any rival. Herod is the embodiment of sweep the leg. Jesus is the opposite of that. Born in a livestock pen, no power, no might, no fanfare, no sword or army, no platform. Jesus' beginning shapes his entire life and ministry. So when he encounters vulnerable people, even vulnerable because of their own sin, Jesus responds with gentleness and mercy, not force, not intimidation. Several years ago, Bruce Springsteen wrote a song called "The Wrestler" that was really kind of the theme song for a movie by the same name about kind of a washed-up person whose life has just been one long beating. And Springsteen imagines different portraits of vulnerability in this song. And he asks questions like this: "Have you ever seen a one-armed man punching at nothing but the breeze? If you've ever seen a one-armed man, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-trick pony in the field so happy and free. If you've ever seen a one-trick pony, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-legged man trying to dance his way free? If you've ever seen a one-legged man, then you've seen me. These images of someone who is already vulnerable, almost down and out, trying their best to survive. Now, in the middle of these poignant images, he uses another one that is just strange to me. I'm just going to tell you about it because I think in the service of poetic parallelism of the one, like one-armed, one-legged, he says, have you ever seen a one-legged dog making its way down the street? I think he's going for three-legged there. I'm not trying to be mean to dogs. I just don't think a one-legged dog is making its way anywhere. Three, maybe, but that doesn't work. And then he says, have you ever seen a scarecrow filled with nothing but dust and weeds? If you've ever seen a scarecrow like that, then you've seen me. Man, some of us know what that feels like. Some of us showed up today feeling like that, just barely hanging on, filled with emptiness. That song embodies, I think, what it's like to be vulnerable. It's the voice of someone who just feels hollowed out by life, someone who's still moving but not sure how, someone who's not broken yet, but pretty close. Many of us recognize that voice. There have been seasons where we have felt like that scarecrow, like that wrestler, like that dog. We're bent and exhausted, and we're still standing, but barely. These are the people Isaiah is talking about. These are the people that Jesus is moving toward. The bruised reeds and the smoldering wicks. The ones who have been beaten down and are barely still burning because of how hard life is. Or maybe because of their own mistakes. Maybe something else. The Advent Messiah is the one who treats these people with gentleness and kindness. If we go back to our Matthew passage, immediately after he quotes Isaiah and he says, this is the servant, this is who Jesus is. Immediately after that, Jesus encounters another vulnerable man, one who's demon-possessed, who's blind and mute and cut off from his community. A bruised reed, if there ever was one. A smoldering wick. And Jesus heals him and restores him. He gives him his sight and his speech, and he gives him back to his people. And right after he does this, the Pharisees say, he must be doing this by demonic power. Even after the teachings, even after the healings, even after the Isaiah passage explaining what's happening, they cannot imagine that God would be this gentle. But here's the truth. God is this gentle. It's who the servant is. It's who Jesus is. And it's how he is with you. Now, I hear the objections in my head when we talk about gentleness and Jesus. I know what some of us might be thinking. Hey, now, remember the time when he made the whip and drove people out? Remember when he called people vipers and whitewashed tombs? And I hear that. But know this. When Jesus spoke or acted harshly, it was always toward people who are exploiting their power or being hypocritical in their judgments toward other. It was never toward vulnerable people. Even people who were caught in sin. Some of you walked in here today as bruised reeds. You are bent low by grief or exhaustion, or you are carrying shame that you can't talk to anyone about, and you are barely holding on to the thinnest strand of hope. And some of you are smoldering wicks. And that flame that used to burn bright is now dangerously low. And your faith feels fragile. Your spirit might be faint, and your strength is almost gone. But the servant sees you. He knows what to do with people who are hurting. And he doesn't snap what's already bending. He doesn't blow out what's barely burning. He protects. And he steadies. He shelters. And he heals. You might feel like you are one breath away from collapse. But the breath of the servant is not a breath that blows you out. It is a breath that brings you back to life. This is the comfort of Advent, that the servant has come, quiet, gentle, faithful, full of mercy. In the chapter right before today's, when Jesus is speaking broadly about his identity to people who are carrying heavy loads, he says this in Matthew 11, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." So for the weary today, the bruised reeds, and the smoldering wicks, the message is simple. Come to Jesus. Bring him your vulnerability. He can receive it, and he will not exploit it like others might. And to those of us who are carrying some strength with us in this season of life, may we be those who can receive hurting people and treat them with the same gentleness as the servant. So hear this, you are safe with him. Your bruised reed, your smoldering wick, bring those to the servant who receives you with gentleness and care. Matthew tells us that in his name, the nations will put their hope. The nations will put their hope. And so can you. Let's stand and sing.